This is a Best of the Golf Club show. Don't call in if you hear a phone number or tee times. Danielle is on vacation and we'll be back next week. Now, the Best of the Golf Club.
Oh, it's a great good day. We're in the clubhouse and coming in to join us this morning, Matty G, Matt Janella, co-host Morning Drive on Golf Channel, Travel Insider. You can read all of his reviews at golfadvisor.com. Adam Barr's joining us. Diana DeLucia, she's over at the Travelers Championship. John Barba, he's the contributing journalist to My Golf Spy. And Ron Syrak, Golf Channel contributor, PGA Lifetime Achievement in Journalism, and author of Vision 54, among others, Play Your Best Golf Now. So we're going to bring Matty G, Matt Janella into the clubhouse right after we thank the people who make this show possible.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Alan Nakata and Associates, the pre-Social Security and Social Security recipient specialists on Oahu and Maui. The team will help you and your parents avoid problems before they come up. That's Alan Nakata, 548-7526. Futura Stone. Futura Stone's master craftsmen can turn your building, warehouse, showroom, or your home project into artwork. Futura Stone, only the best. And by Claude Brousseau, master PGA professional, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Vision 54 coach, Aimpoint certified, and Golf Channel lead coach. You need a lesson with Claude Brousseau. Creative Plumbing. Whether a building, shopping center, store, a custom home, or townhouse, a new build, renovation, or repair, call Creative Plumbing, because it has to be done right. Creative Plumbing. And by Raynor Doors, the overhead door used to protect the Lamborghini showroom. Provide lasting security and safety for your business, your home, Raynor Doors.
Alan Nakata and Associates, and the number is 548-7526. Need help? Call 548-7526. All right, let's go to the Travelers Championship. Matt Janella, Golf Channel's travel insider and host of Morning Drive, covering the courses, the resorts, and avid amateurs for Golf Channel. Welcome into the clubhouse, Matty G.
Aloha, Danielle. Always nice to be with you.
It's a beautiful sunny day in Hawaii. We're going to have a real hot scorcher with easterlies barely 15 miles an hour. I understand it's been a bit rainy over there in Connecticut.
It was raining this morning. I was out at the golf course for Morning Drive real early, and then I came back, and it's actually all cleared up now. A little bit of a wind is a factor, you know, probably about a 10-mile-an-hour wind right now, but the rain should not be an issue for the rest of the day.
Excellent. And TPC River Highlands, it's a beautiful course. That's where they play the Travelers Championship. Jordan Spieth is loving this course, and this is his first time there. My question is, it's such a beautiful course. Everybody loves who plays this course, loves it, all the professionals. Why did they make changes, and what were those changes? I was listening to you on Morning Drive and watching you. Steve Winsloff updated the bunkers?
Yeah, well, that's pretty common. You know, a golf course originally on this land, Pete Dye kind of redid this whole complex in 1982. One of his disciples, they call him Bobby Weed, came in probably about 6 or 7 years later and kind of made some additional changes to the golf course. And it really hadn't been touched then since the late 80s. So very common, and we've reported on it any number of times, of a golf course that sort of late 80s, early 90s, all the way into the 2000s with given technology and where the ball is going now. And then just general agronomy and drainage, you know, needs that kind of happen to a golf course. Winsloff and his team that actually sort of on staff for the PGA Tour came in a year and a half ago, two years ago after the 2015 tournament, and really just took the shot link data and kind of updated the bunkers, put the bunkers where they're more relevant, improved obviously the drainage, cleaned up some sight lines and some edging along some of the lakes, and brought some of the greens a little closer to the water, most notably at, say, 17. Kind of made some mild tweaks to the greens and brought back some pin positions that either were there and had gone away, or just they needed in order to kind of keep going forward as a regular tour event, given, you know, modern green speed. So just kind of put a nice shine and update and polish on the place. And,
awesome.
And as I said earlier in the week, I think he deserves a lot of credit, because you got a golf course where everybody already loves. He didn't move any tees, so essentially really didn't get any more yards. It was just kind of an update, and he did it with such a deft touch that the players aren't talking about the changes, and that's a credit to him and his team.
Absolutely. If they, you know, love the course, and if they changed it in a way that, well, upset them, they would definitely talk.
Yeah, well, it's a popular course of just keep it that way.
Yes, exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, we just finished the U.S. Open, Erin Hills. What's your take on the success of Erin Hills as a major championship destination?
I talked to a lot of players this week. I mean, you know, informal polling, kind of just working the range and the practice putting green between players and caddies. The consensus was, as a golf course, Erin Hills, you know, and the architecture and the 60-yard fairways and kind of the look of the place, the feel of the place, A-. They really actually liked it. Even Jason Day, who missed the cut, loved it. You know? But as a U.S. Open venue, and in terms of the setup as a U.S. Open venue, it got closer to more of a C-. And that's because, you know, I think, I guess, as general fans, we expect to see something closer to par as the winning score. And then even for the players, I think they generally expect to have to grind it out as a U.S. Open venue. That was Jason Day told me. He says, you know, to be honest with you, I had this mental, you know, mindset about having to grind, and when, you know, when it was playing as easy as it was, it kind of threw me off. Now, is that the reason why he missed the cut? I don't know, but it seemed a little funky. I think that's actually really good news. Again, as you said, I cover the avid amateurs. I cover public golf in a sense, and I think that if the USGA were going to err on a side of playability, you know, again, they anticipated high winds, they anticipated a hard, fast golf course, but they got heavy rains early in the week and they didn't get any wind. So in fairness to them, look, it could have been a lot different. And I think at the end of the day, as a public facility, I'm happy that Erin Hills is well received as a golf course, because at Chambers Bay, you got a public facility, municipal golf course, and the way the USGA set it up and stopped watering, it looked really bad, and the greens putted really bad, and I think that's going to end up hurting Chambers Bay in the long run at a public facility, and I don't think that's really fair, because I think Chambers Bay is a good golf course, and it is worthy of taking the trip and going to play that golf course in a beautiful setting, and it's a great story, and it just used to be an NP gravel pit. Well, I prefer that the players are saying, man, I wish it played harder, because, you know, 15, 20 years from now, USGA can always pinch in those fairways and keep that rough long and make it a little harder and faster. So I'd rather err on the side, especially as a public facility, to have it be considered a good golf course and well received, you know what I mean, by the viewers.
Absolutely.
You know, does that make any sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. It's a public golf course. And it was chosen as a USGA championship site. And if they wanted to, they could toughen it up. If they wanted to,
and they got the crowds. They got a U.S. Open in the Midwest. They got a venue that, you know, the owner kept it closed until they got there, until essentially the tournament started. They're going to make a ton of money on tickets and merchandise. It serves all those purposes for the USGA, as opposed to kind of that private facility experience where they already have the built-in membership. They can make those as tough and crazy as they want to, and the next week they can go cut it back, and the membership's already built in, and it doesn't matter if people think it's a good course or a good venue or the place that they want to play, because they wouldn't be able to play it anyway.
I got to kind of switch gears but stay on the same track in a way, because we lost a wonderful man this week. He was 96 years old, a wonderful life, Sandy Tatum, USGA president from 78 to 79, and of course I wanted to talk to you about, he was serving on the USGA Executive Committee Committee from 72 to 1980. When you said grind it out, golfers have, in the U.S. Open have come to expect to have to grind it out. And didn't he kind of, when they had the I think it's been called, nicknamed the Massacre at Winged Foot, speaking of a private course, that you don't have to worry about what the public thinks of the course. It doesn't need anybody to go to play it because it's all private membership, right? I think it was a 7-over. Hale Irwin won. 7-over par. That was a tough one.
Yeah. Well, Sandy Tatum, Frank Sandy Tatum is a legend because I'm from Northern California. He's a Northern California guy. He went to Stanford, won an individual title at Stanford, team title. He, you know, he went on to wear the blue coat and serve the USGA. I put him on the Mount Rushmore of people in the world of golf in Northern California. And I think that, you know, Harvey Ward, Johnny Miller, Ken Venturi and Sandy Tatum. Those are the guys who really sort of impacted the game in Northern California. And what he did at Harding Park, which was, you know, take that quote weed patch that was used as a parking lot in 1998 at the Olympic Club U.S. Open and convinced the city of San Francisco and the PGA Tour and a couple other private investors like Charles Schwab to invest back into municipal golf and ultimately championship golf at a public facility in the great city of San Francisco instead of just bringing championship golf every 15 to 20 years for Toast U.S. Open. And he went on to get World Golf Championships, Charles Schwab Cups, President's Cups, you know, and it's going to go host the PGA Championship in 2020. That was Sandy Tatum's vision. And that all that, you know, I look at Harding Park as the blueprint for what is golf, municipal golf in America, which is, you know, a level, different levels of green fees based on where you live or where you're coming from. So locals get to play it for a lot less. You got an inside nine hole course there at Harding Park called the Fleming Nine. You got a hub of a first tee. One of the great first tee programs in America is at Harding Park. All of that's possible because of Sandy Tatum. So, you know, we did lose a very special guy. And for me, from Northern California, it always felt like with Sandy Tatum at those tables of blue coats or green coats or whatever the case may be, we had a representative, a well-respected representative, kind of a living golf god at the time of someone who was fighting on behalf of golf in Northern California, and he'll be greatly missed.
The regular golfer, the public golfer, the one who's looking for a public course. I've had some conversations with Mark Rolfing about the Alawai Golf Course and creating it as like a Oahu Mecca. Not changing the Alawai so much as upgrading, updating it, kind of like refreshing the course. It should be an 18-hole course, right? Top Golf could be there. All the associations, you know, the Hawaii State Associations could be here. The golf associations at that hub where everybody would come together and high school championships could be played there. And UH could be, you know, could be competing there with this beautiful built-in spectator of the visitor and the locals and everybody coming together there at the Alawai. And that's kind of, you know, we talk about youth on course, and didn't Sandy Tatum create youth on course?
He didn't create it, but he was a big fan of it. You know, again, it's the Northern California Golf Stage subsidized green fees, caddy program, scholarships for kids, all the great stuff there,
Yeah, and so Mark Rolfing was saying that in his conversations, he believed that Hawaii's kids, 17 and under, would be able to play free at the municipal courses on Oahu, which is perfect. And it's perfect for kids to get into the game, to be able to start playing the game, and then they get accustomed to playing the game. It becomes part of their DNA. You know, this is something I do. And then they, when they can afford to play, they can keep on playing. It's a really, really wonderful idea to keep that public attitude, but making it a place where people would want to come and pay good money. Like you said, different levels of prices depending on who you are.
I love on Kauai, I love Wailua. I think it does a lot of what we're talking about there in terms of getting access for locals, and it holds the other resort courses sort of accountable. So, you know, yeah, resort courses can get those out-of-towners, but if those out of, you know, Turtle Bay and Kahuku, if Kahuku, you know, and how many times have we talked about what potentially could happen at Kahuku, you know, Kahuku, which is like a put on a fresh face out there and kind of, you know, manipulate that golf course a little bit, really make it a it's already great and charming for so many different reasons, but it could be so much better, right? It's such a really cool piece of land, and I know Rolfing has talked to a lot of people about the potential investment there. Well, that what that does is then holds Turtle Bay accountable and keeps those golf courses, the Fazio and the Palma, really accessible and affordable for more locals there on the North Shore. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes. All of it kind of ends up becoming very healthy, and you can always charge the tourists and the people from out of town a premium fee, but it's all about sort of that local accessibility, growing game. That was Sandy Tatum's big note that he always hit. Access is everything.
Exactly.
If you don't have access, how do you grow the game?
Exactly.
You know, we can have as many first tee programs in the world, put golf clubs in kids' hands, or how many times we can get people to go to play Top Golf and catch the bug, but if then they can't actually get access to a place that makes sense on a long-term basis, then you're kind of stunting the growth.
Exactly. And we want the kids to have fun and keep playing.
Yeah.
Speaking of a kid, I'm looking at the leaderboard, and of course I see the regulars, except C.T. Pan. I'm not familiar with C.T. Pan. I went, C.T. Pan? Who's C.T. Pan? He's there, but young Bo Hostler. Wasn't he the young man, heartbreak in that college championship game? He hurt his shoulder and he had to withdraw, and then that left his team short. So he's recovered, obviously.
Yeah, 100% recovery. I talked to him this week. He went to the University of Texas, won the Haskin Awards in 2016, essentially the best college player of the year. He played at Chambers Bay U.S. Open in 2015. He contended at the 2012 U.S. Open at Olympic Club. He was, he was in the mix at the age of 17. What a cool story that was. And I said this morning on the show, you get guys like Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Daniel Berger and John Rahm, and they're making these jumps. This very quick transition from elite college player to competitive professional player. Well, Bo Hostler is next in this lineage, and he is so polished. I talked to his agent, David Winkle. I said, does he lean on Jordan Spieth as a mentor, both being from Texas? And he says, no, let me tell you something. Bo Hostler doesn't need a mentor. He's 22 going on 40.
Wow.
He comes from a good family. He has a good head on his shoulder. He's got a good work ethic. He has realistic goals, and there's no ceiling in this kid's future. I mean, he can be as good as he wants to be, and it's no shock that he's contending at a place like this. A good ball striker facility, a good golf course that you got to think your way around, and you got to be you got to pick your spots as to when you get aggressive. Well, he's doing all of that, and he finished second on a web.com tour event last week. Gives him sort of new status going forward in a set schedule. He got a sponsor's exemption here. Doesn't surprise me he's taking advantage of it. If he finishes top 10, he'll get another opportunity at another, not necessarily next week, because I think that's an invitational, but the next open field tour event, I think he would get a spot if he finishes top 10 here. So Bo Hostler's not going away anytime soon.
He's a young man.
He missed Q school because of that shoulder injury, and that's why he had to sort of Monday qualify his way into the web.com events, but he's already accomplished that, and he's sky's the limit.
Awesome. I do watch a lot of Morning Drive, and Matt Janella is host on Morning Drive. There's something about Team Reimer. He pulled out the boss card today. He's not giving you your schedule. What's the deal? You're going to be a caddy?
Reimer's guy, he's going to try to play like six or seven events on the Champions Tour next year after he turns 50, and he's assembled a team with like Larry the Cable Guy is his dietitian, I believe. He's got Ken Duke as one of his caddies. I'm going to be one of his caddies. He's got Travis Fulton as his swing coach. He's kind of assembled this group of people that he calls Team Reimer, and I was just giving him a hard time because Ken Duke and I were talking about, hey, we haven't heard, when do we cat? We got to lock this into our schedule. We're busy too. And he just said, I'm the boss. You'll find out when I tell you. So,
yes, when I decide when you'll be there. Yes, indeed. Well, that was wonderful. Wonderful listening to you guys talk. I guess I need to ask you one thing because I'm curious about the drug changes on the PGA Tour. Any talk in the locker room about how they feel about that?
Not that I've heard, to be honest with you, Danielle. You know, it seems to make sense to kind of align them with the game going to continue in the world of the Olympics. It just seems like, you know, the game is notorious for integrity. Why not just have, you know, everything sort of lined up with what's going to be going forward as an Olympic sport? I haven't heard anything. I don't consider myself an expert on the subject matter. I'm sure probably guys like Ron Cyrak would know more than I do, but I haven't heard anything. I've been here all week and I've talked to a lot of players and caddies, so I don't know what that means other than it's not much chatter that's coming up when I'm around.
Exactly. Well, you know, plus I thought it was kind of strange. Why not do it? Except that there was some talk of them not liking blood drawn because of the needle puncture and possibly affecting their swing. I'm like, really?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just don't think they want the needles. That's a bottom line.
Yeah.
Affecting the swing. Yeah, right. Matt Janella, finally, and before I let you go, how's Bandon?
Oh, he's 6 weeks old, little baby Bandon, and he's already been to 6 states. He just went to his first PGA Tour event yesterday. He's been on 9 planes. He's got status on 3 different airlines. He's a dream. He's a dream. Total dream. He sleeps great, eats great, and, you know, and poops great, which is, you got to check all 3 of those boxes.
Matt Janella, Golf Channel Travel Insider, host, Morning Drive, covering courses, resorts, and avid amateurs for Golf Channel. Thanks for being on the show. Always a pleasure.
Aloha, Danielle, and my best to everybody in Hawaii.
Awesome. We'll be back after this with Adam Barr. He's director of the USGA Museum. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is the Golf Club. Yes, indeed.
We'll be right back to the best of the Golf Club.
I need help. Maybe you've heard that from people who are taking care of a loved one. They don't want to go into a home. They want to stay at home, but need help taking care of a parent, a spouse, or a relative. Meal planning and prep, light housekeeping, assistance, bathing, hygiene. See, home care to give peace of mind to you and to the one you love. A few hours a week or 24/7. It's really up to you. You choose the number of hours you need. So need help? They have a plan for you. For your parents, your own retirement. Eliminate the hassles and the frustration and the unknown. Call Need Help. The number is 548-7526. Eliminate the hassles, the frustration, and the unknown. Call Need Help now at 548-7526. They're available on Maui and Oahu, of course. They're actually in all 50 states. And tell them Danielle sent you. Need Help? That number is 548-7526.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurastone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. Super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint. It's polished concrete, as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurastone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
A mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
It's going to be a gorgeous day to play a round of golf. I've got a couple earlier in tee times, but mostly midday. Here we go. Royal Hawaiian Country Club has an 844 and a 916. Makaha East has a 1030. Volcano on the Big Island at 1006. It's about 58 degrees. Makalei has an 848. And Poipu Bay Golf Course has a 9 o'clock. Snake and Skins and the Southside Men's Club. They're all going out to play golf today. And if you can get out, it's a perfect day to play a round of golf. The winds are just, they're light, easterly, so they won't be challenging your swing. Adam Barr is director of the USGA Museum. And we're going to bring him into the clubhouse now because they have an interesting new exhibit called Breaking New Ground, Women and Golf Course Architecture. It's about to open up. Welcome to the show.
Aloha, Danielle, and I have a question first. If Janella gets to name his kid Bandon, how come I couldn't name my son Oakmont? Where did I miss that boat?
Isn't it a great name, though? Bandon?
I'm telling you. Well, then if the next one, he's going to want to start naming, like, Pacific Dunes and on and on and on. Right?
How about just Dunes?
Yeah, like, and then you drop a note to his wife. Another sympathy note. To him,
another sympathy note. Okay, Adam, you have got the best sense of humor, and here you are. One usually thinks of directors of museums as very staid, very proper. and the USJ, one always thinks, you know, very staid, very proper. I think you're perfect.
That's interesting. You're right. We, you know, the museum is housed in a 98-year-old mansion that was built by a stockbroker years ago as an escape from New York. But within the walls of the museum, we are trying to think ahead all the time, which is interesting for a place that's devoted to the past. But you mentioned breaking new ground. To our knowledge, this is the first exhibit or scholarly treatment of the contributions of women golf course designers to that profession, and also a little bit of the history of how golf courses and teeing grounds and other parts of golf courses have developed for women in the last 150 years.
Well, so frankly, starting, yes, Pasa Tiempo, I hear that, or yeah. Cypress Point, I don't think a woman. And
it's true.
That's a shame, isn't it?
It's true. When you play, especially, let's think about the 16th Paso Tiempo, that is a stout piece of par 4. And there are some shots and carries on both those courses and places you have to put your golf ball where you think of a lot of brawny golf. But, you know, Marion Hollins, who was involved in those things, was a good player and had an imagination that encompassed not just the quote-unquote men's game, but the game for all players. And if nothing else, think about it, the experience of the 2014 U.S. Open and U.S. Women's Open being played back-to-back, where my colleagues in championship administration would put the landing areas in places that challenged the second shot, no matter who you were, and would change the teeing ground, either by distance or angle or both, to take advantage of those second shot locations. Put that in the context of the history of women thinking about the game in the early part of the 20th century, and you see there's a lot of fertile ground there for you know, scholarship on how women contributed. And then right into the present day with people such as Alice Dye and Jan Beljan, who are still working. Alice, God bless her, 90 years old, at making golf courses that any kind of player can enjoy.
So the women who are being featured, because there are many more, but Marion Hollis, Hollins, rather, an excellent right. player. Hollins won the 1921 U.S. Women's Amateur, captained the U.S. team in the first Curtis Cup in 1932. She developed Cypress Point Club and Pasa Tiempo. She hired Alistair McKenzie to design both. I thought that was interesting. The woman goes out right. and finds a guy, right?
Mrs. Hollins got things done. She had definitely had a reputation for getting things done, and her contemporary in England, Molly Gourlay, the same thing. As the years went on, those of you out west who are more attuned to California golf probably knew more of Mrs. Hollins' legend than those of us in the east. But she was, as you say, a formidable player, and like a lot of good players, was concerned about how we use the ground as players and what a real challenge is. And so she was a perfect candidate with her attitude to really move things along for women in golf course architecture in the first half of this century.
Do you know how she got into architecture from being a player? I mean, that was a difficult world to delve into, wasn't it?
Part of that story is told in the exhibit, and a lot of it has to do with insistence and also the fact that as a good player, she had developed a reputation in the circles in which she moved where people would listen to her and say, hey, you know, if we do this at Cypress Point or if we do this at Paso Tiempo, do you think it's going to make a good shot? Or she'd play and say, that second shot's kind of boring. You know, I don't know that actually happened, but I don't
understand.
She didn't hold back her opinion.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, another woman featured is, and I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce her name right, is a Most Excellent Order of the British Empire member, Molly Gourlay.
Yes, that's right. Molly Gourlay was an OBE, and she was a contemporary of Marion Hollins in England. And also, because of her reputation as a player, got credence enough to start suggesting and implementing designs.
I was reading this. I mean, she actually worked with Tom Simpson renovating the old course at Ballybunion in 1930. Yeah. I mean, she was touching sacred ground, a woman that doesn't even get to be a member of some of these places.
Yeah, no question. It was anomalous. You hit upon an important chord in the music of the exhibit that women had to find, you know, workarounds for some of the cultural and societal roadblocks so that they could actually have an influence. It wasn't a straight line as it was for the men who wanted to get into it, the Mackenzies, the Tillinghast, and on and on, and Rosses, and on and on and on. So they had to work in some cases twice as hard and more to make their influence felt. So the exhibit is not just a story of what they did, it's a story of the courage that it took to propel all that.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Celebrating women and the challenges they face to get where men get, they have to work, like you said, so much harder to climb the mountain, because everybody's got to climb the mountain. There's a lot of guys who want to accomplish the same thing that a man accomplishes. It's not like he's the only one to get there. The woman just has to climb over all those guys.
Exactly. And it's a big part of the museum's job, I think, to shine the light on those stories. And, you know, although we're proud at the USGA of our commitment to women's golf from our very beginnings, one of our first three championships was the U.S. Women's Amateur in 1895. But nonetheless, the obligation never ceases to make sure that we tell the stories of the women who made this game better over the last century and more.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Jan Valjean. More than 20 years as a senior designer for Tom Fazio, the second woman elected to the American Society of Golf Course Architects after Alice Dye, who we'll also talk about. She still runs her own firm?
Yeah, Jan's working very hard. She made time to appear in a video for us, which I think people are going to enjoy. But she talks in terms of getting beyond gender. She actually says gender doesn't matter. Imagination and vision is what matters. And she talks about a lot about design philosophies. You know, test the best and make it fun for the rest is generally her mantra. And Alice agrees with this. But Jan championed, for example, scoring tees as opposed to forward, women's, children's, juniors, whatever, some sort of exclusionary name, as a way to enjoy the game and sharpen skills. In this video, which I found fascinating, she cited the use of scoring tees once a week by college coaches who put their players out there. And these are flexible kids who can hit the ball a long way, men or women. And they're playing 4,500 tees to teach themselves to go low, to score. Because if you're playing at 4,500 yards and you're a good player and you have it at 90 yards and you get it outside of 10 feet, you're mad at yourself. So you work on getting it to 3.5, 4 feet. So you learn how it feels to go low and you learn how to score. Now, this is the golf course architect doing this, actually affecting the way it's taught.
But it's interesting because so many golf courses. Yeah, I'm sorry, we lost you for a couple seconds and I jumped in to take care of the time. Could you repeat what you just said at the end? We've lost you again for some reason. Are you there? I'm not sure what happened, but we're talking with Adam Barr. He is the director of the USGA Museum, and I think he's trying to call back in because we were just talking about Jan Valjean, and we just lost you there for a second.
Yes, I'm back. We don't, no landlines out here in New Jersey, sorry.
No landlines.
I was waxing poetic about Jan. I don't know where I got cut off, but it's not just tees and greens for the modern golf course architect. It's actually affecting the way people look at the game, men and women. And Jan, as an experienced landscape architect, is still going full steam ahead on doing that.
It's wonderful. What I couldn't help but think is most architects are trying to protect the course from scorers. You know, like, here she is wanting to get the golfer out there and have a good time, but then also be able to turn the golf course into a severe challenge if that's necessary.
And yeah, it's really, you manage the challenge with a dial and you set it at the right place depending on the kind of player that is going to be playing the golf course. It takes a certain number and angle of tees, that's one thing. If it takes shortening a bunker to make a little more landing and run-up area in front of the green, that's another. So there are all kinds of dials to turn to get to the right place.
But then we come to Alice Dye, a 9-time Indiana amateur champion, 2-time U.S. senior women's amateur champ, member of the 1970 Curtis Cup team. She's worked on Harbor Town, Crooked Stick, Teeth of the Dog, you know, the 17th green. Was that really her idea?
So she says, and Pete always endorsed that story, that he was kind of had writer's block, as it were, or architect's block on what to do with this great hole in the ground at TPC Sawgrass. And there's pictures you can see of the Peninsula Green and all this sand dug out around it, massive amount of sand. And she says, Pete, put the water back in and let people just shoot at that thing. And now it's, if you Google green, you know, what comes up is, or golf green, what comes up very often is TPC Sawgrass 17. So it was maybe the most notorious par 3 in golf. It was Alice's idea. She did so much in her own right, and then partnered with Pete at his suggestion. And she says he was the visionary, and she took science at Rollins College in Orlando, she said. So this is a direct quote, my little amoebas became golf greens.
I like her. And she's still working, and she's 90. And she's wonderful.
Years old, yeah. And she's a firecracker.
This is Adam Barr, director of the USGA Museum, and we're talking about an exhibit called Breaking New Ground, Women and Golf Course Architecture. When does it open?
Well, the soft opening will be July 1st. Everything will be in place on, you know, Saturday, July 1st. During the week of the U.S. Women's Open, the week of July 10th, it's being played at Trump Bedminster near our headquarters in Far Hills, New Jersey. We'll have a formal reception during which a lot of people will get to see the exhibit for the first time. It'll be up at least until the end of 2018. So anybody who is in northern New Jersey, the New York area, even Philadelphia, it's an easy ride and easy to get to and well worth the trip. And, of course, for people who might not get there, we will be putting selected parts of it on USGA.org throughout its tenure at the museum.
Beautiful. Adam Barr, Director, USGA Museum, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Danielle, mahalo. Always a pleasure.
Aloha. We're going to come back, and we're going to get inside Golf Kitchen. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
We'll be right back to the best of the golf club.
Meet national radio host, multimillionaire real estate investor, and mentor to the top award-winning apartment owners in the country, Del Walmsley, at the Multifamily Masters Tour, September 22nd and 23rd. Go to multifamilymasterstour.com. Tour 4 actual apartment complexes owned and operated by Del students. Experience award-winning multifamily strategies in action. Get the insider secrets to triple-digit returns and learn the 6 ways you can make multifamily millions too. Meet where the action happens, on-site in Dallas this fall. Go to multifamilymasterstour.com.
Busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home. You need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's Creative Plumbing!
841-2837.
Your experts on call.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
Well, we can't get enough of the TPC River Highlands and the gorgeous Travelers Championship grounds that are happening now. And we're going to go right back to the Travelers, where Diana DeLucia, CEO of Golf Kitchen, her 600-page coffee table book and collectible, the second in the Golf Kitchen collection, will be Golf Kitchen America. And Golf Kitchen Magazine will be out this fall, and the first cover, Rye Waddington, executive chef at Winged Foot, the magazine preview, getting excellent reviews. I've even ordered my subscription, and I think a great idea for the holidays, I'm going to order subscriptions for the foodies in my life. I have at least 3. This is perfect, because one of the selected recipes, and you can go to golfkitchen.com, you can see the beauty of the work that Diana DeLucia does. at her website, you can see the quality that you'll know you'll get when you get her magazine and her book, because the book is awesome. And this recipe is sushi flatbed. A flat bread. Diana, how was the trip up to, the golf course? I can't remember the town that it's in, yes.
We are in Cromwell, Connecticut, and we're at the Travelers Tournament. I actually just got here because the traffic coming in was a major, parking lot on the way in, because we had, as you know, a big storm this morning, and they delayed play, and everyone's arriving at the same time. So I literally just picked up my media pass, and I'm standing outside the Ben and Jerry's stand.
That's a good place to be. Got a favorite flavor?
No, there's a chill zone. They have a chill zone over here. So if you go and sit down, and there's a chair, and it just like freezes you.
Because
it's really hot.
We need them. A chill chair. I'm Ben and Jerry's. Send them over to Hawaii because it's really hot. Now, you know that Diana DeLucia's not into the golf per se. I mean, she appreciates the golf courses and all the people who work there and the players and the play and all of that. But she's really into the golf kitchens. And you went over to TPC River Highlands because you're looking for a young lady who actually is developing quite a reputation in the world of chef.
Yeah, Chef Amanda, she's a very talented young chef. She's only in her very early 20s, and
wow.
She is in charge of the culinary scene here at the Cromwell, TPC Cromwell River Highlands, and she's in charge of all the food inside the clubhouse today, and unfortunately, I won't make it in there while we're on the radio, so we can talk about it, though.
Yeah.
But we'll have an opportunity to come back and talk about Chef Amanda another time.
Would you like to feature her, Amanda Laborto picture in your magazine?
We're talking about for Golf Kitchen America. It's not set in stone yet, so I don't really want to make a commitment to that, but they do have a place on hold in Golf Kitchen America.
Wow.
We needed to get past this tournament.
Yes, because everything is focused on the tournament, and of course, it's major, a major operation. You've been traveling, and you will be traveling, and you sent me a video. I need to share it on my my Facebook page. It's called The Golf Club, because it's wide open, and anybody can go there. It is amazing. You showed me Chef's Garden. You're going there July 5th through the 8th. What an amazing place. Where is that?
I'm actually going to Addison Reserve Country Club first, Danielle, and that will be from the 5th to the 8th, and I'll be working with Michael McCarthy, the general manager there, which I'm very excited to meet, and then I will be working with a very talented chef who previously worked for Chef Daniel Belud in New York City. His name is Zach Bell, and a very, very talented pastry chef, and she used to work at Wingfoot, actually, many years ago. She's very, very talented, and her name is Dana Iannelli.
Wonderful.
And I'm excited about that. I'm eager to get back on the road. As you know, I like to be moving. And then I'm flying straight out to Ohio and the Chef's Garden and interview Farmer Lee and tour the garden. And I'm excited because I get to stay in the Chef's Suite.
In the Chef's Suite?
Yeah, I get to stay in the Chef's Suite. It's a really... I'm told it's the most amazing suite that they have on the property.
Okay, so this is Chef's Garden, and when you see the video, or you can get pictures, tell us a little bit about what this is, and who is Farmer Lee?
Farmer Lee is, he's a farmer, genuine farmer from Ohio, near Cleveland, and I forgot the name of the town, sorry, Farmer Lee, but his family developed this amazing farm, which produces the most high-quality, upscale salads, vegetables, you name it, microgreens. It's very sophisticated, as you saw in the video. It's great for photography. It's great for fine dining restaurants, and they just have the most stunning products. And you would have seen all the chefs shopping there and coming in from trips from all over the place. And they have, like, he has a jet that flies people in. You know, he has the most amazing operation. I met him about 12 years ago in New York City at a City Meals event, a City Meals on Wheels charity event that was a chef event that I used to go to. And things have come full circle because a lot of the upscale golf clubs work with Farmer Lee.
So Farmer Lee has a jet to fly people into his chef's garden.
He does, yes.
This is what I call upscale gardening and farming and taking care of your clientele. Does he also ship to people?
Sorry, Daniel.
No problem. I understand.
Getting allergies here.
Yeah, it's all that water and all the pollen and all the stuff that happens when the sun comes out and things start growing again. Chef's Garden, do they send you, if you wanted to buy something from Chef's Garden, do they ship?
They ship the most amazing product. And when you receive the product, it has your brand on it. So you get it in beautiful packaging. It's absolutely stunning, in perfect condition.
So you can have your label on Chef's Garden produce that gets shipped to you. That's amazing.
Yes.
What an operation.
I've been on many photo shoots, and the product is shipped to me. Every time I go to a photo shoot, I recommend Farmer Lee, and they ship the product to the chef or the hotel that I'm working for, and it always comes beautifully.
Well, I'm excited. Diana DeLucia, CEO of Golf Kitchen, her 600-page coffee table book and collectible. The second one is going to be Golf Kitchen America. You're looking for suggestions from people? I mean, your last book with Sabonic in it and Winged Foot, of course, all of these fabulous places. Do you want people to make suggestions for you?
I would love people to make suggestions. As you know, I can't travel to every single golf club in the world, but I'm looking for global golf clubs that are private and very upscale resorts that have a great culinary team.
That is wonderful for the chef. We have met some of the most intriguing people, and I always go back to Puerto Rico, where the chef actually fishes. He loves to fish. He's discovered this passion, but he has a 2-acre garden as well just outside his kitchen, so he can go collect from the garden whatever is ready. He can go fish in the sea and see what he catches, and then he makes dinner. Talk about it's so perfect. His name just escapes me.
Jose Carley.
Thank you. Jose Carley, and his wonderful daughters. I hope they're doing well. Thank you for taking us to the Travelers, and thank you for continuing to seek out. I'm Amanda Laporto Pitcher. I can't wait to hear more about her. It's very unusual for a chef in her early 20s, no less, to be so highly esteemed at this point in her career. Diana, thanks so much.
Thank you, Danielle. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk soon. Aloha.
Thanks.
I need to order something from Farmer Lee just because I want to see what it looks like. We're going to come back and take a jump into Golf Spy. John Barba is the contributing journalist, and I can't help but wonder, how does one get good enough to be a golf spy? We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
We'll be right back to the Best of the Golf Club.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurastone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. Super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint. It's polished concrete, as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurastone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens.
Your plumbing can't wait.
It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight.
Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii.
Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home. You need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's creative!
Plumbing.
841-2837.
Your experts on call.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf easier with the coaching of master PGA teaching professional Claude Brousseau. Claude will simplify your game, scratch golfer or just beginner. As a two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, now with the Ko'olina Golf Academy, you will get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422. Or email him at claudeforbestgolf@gmail.com. That's Claude Brousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
This is a Best of the Golf Club show. Don't call in if you hear a phone number or tee times. Danielle is on vacation and we'll be back next week. Now, the Best of the Golf Club.
It's a marvelous day, you know, and sometimes when you're out shopping, you just want to escape to a place where you can kind of recover, sort of check out all those packages that you've, you know, and have a little something to just to eat, a little coffee. And new in Kahala is Good Day Coffee, offering excellent cappuccinos and espresso drinks. The bean comes straight from the Big Island. It's located inside the consignment center at 4230 Waialae Avenue, across the street from Kahala Mall. See, you've got all your packages. They have outside seating, free Wi-Fi, and they are dog friendly. Now featuring their fresh made cold brew iced coffee brewed at room temperature for 16 hours for an exceptionally smooth beverage. Only $4.50. They also have delicious baked goods made in-house by Sono. Try their, that's like So Ono? Sono. Try their amazing Lily Koi cheesecake. It's a deal at six. Or maybe you like biscotti with your coffee. They have vanilla biscotti dipped milk chocolate. You just $2.50. And try the chocolate biscotti dipped in raspberry with white chocolate. Mmm. Okay, it's Good Day Coffee. They're open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and on Sunday from 10 to 4. Let's now bring into the clubhouse Golf Spy. John Barba, contributing journalist, welcome in.
Hello, Danielle. How are you?
Excellent. And you're an old radio guy.
Yeah, from days gone by, yes.
From days gone by.
Yes, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Now, tell me, how does one qualify to be good enough in the golf equipment business to be a golf spy, to evaluate the equipment and bring the dirt to the forum?
Well, how do you become a golf spy? Did you see Casino Royale?
Yes.
It's a lot like that. Almost exactly like that, without the wicker chair scene. That's the only thing I have to add.
Okay.
I do have a license to birdie. I don't use it very often because, you know, we have to be careful about that. But it was more of a just luck. I joined the MyGolfSpy.com community forum many years ago because I received permission from the Ways and Means Committee at home to buy a new set of golf clubs. And I didn't know what to buy, so I wanted to find out about golf equipment. I did a lot of research, did the whole Google thing, and it led me to my Golf Spy, which printed some pretty detailed and very independent reviews, which I appreciated as a consumer. And I did some research there. I joined the community forum, started to get involved in talking golf equipment with other golf equipment geeks just like me. And just eventually got involved with the ownership, got to know them, they got to know me, and invited me to start writing some articles for them, some blogs, because I blog for my real job, so I blog carried over for this as well.
That's excellent. I was reading one of your blogs about Bridgestone. Last year, I think you did an overview of Bridgestone's golf. It's interesting what you wrote. It's like Bridgestone, everybody knows Bridgestone. It's this huge rubber company. They're 85 years old. I didn't realize the golf section was only 10 years old.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. I mean, they had owned different companies, and then they purchased other companies, you know, like Precept and all those other companies. And then they started branding their company as Bridgestone Golf in the U.S. only about 10 years ago. And they've done wonderfully with golf balls. They have a really slick golf ball facility outside of Atlanta where they make their B330 series golf balls, and it's a cool process to watch. They've done very, very well with the golf balls. They've struggled with hits and misses with their equipment, which is unfortunate because it's really good stuff. They just haven't really found their niche, and I'm not entirely sure that where that niche is going to wind up being. There's nothing wrong with the equipment. The equipment's outstanding in and of its own right. It's just finding an audience for it.
Well, one of the things is, we have golf's final four. We have Ping, we have Callaway, Kushnet, and TaylorMade, right?
Right.
So
yeah, and Cobra's kind of that fifth one on the outside looking in.
And then there's Bridgestone. So it is tough. It's, what is it about the marketplace that is it? There's a shrinking number of golfers.
I'm not entirely sure of that. I mean, is there a shrinking number of golfers? Yeah. But you've got companies like Callaway and TaylorMade and the others and Titleist. Titleist has its core following. I don't think Titleist is going to get any bigger. I don't think Titleist is going to get any smaller. It has a core following of people that are loyal Titleist club users and ball users, and that's going to stay right there. TaylorMade and Callaway kind of fluctuate up and down, and I don't know if they're taking bites out of each other's apples, so to speak, mm-hmm. over the years. But they're the two big dogs. They're the two biggest companies. They have the most money to spend on marketing, and they do, and they're very good at it. And they're, of course, their equipment is rock solid as well. Ping is kind of interesting because they're the only privately held company of that group. And they really answer to no one, and they march to their own drummer, so to speak. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just, my transition from you're bringing Ping up last, and you're right. As a privately held company, they can march to their own drummer. They can be a little revolutionary in the way they do things or secretive in the way they do things. And I was surprised when I read your article about Nike. I never really took seriously. I'm sorry. I always figured, if Tiger Woods or anybody is playing Nike, those guys can just walk in and say, make me a club that's like this, So I didn't put that much stock in the Nike equipment. Maybe that's not fair. But then when Ping went and bought some of their patents, I went, oh, that's interesting. Ping, that I respect very much, thinks a Nike patent is worth buying. Interesting. Do you know which patents they purchased?
Well, actually, the article in question focused on five specific patents because that was what came out that day. The news was Ping purchased a bunch of patents. These are the five that we know about. Since then, done a little bit of research, and if you really want a truly mind-numbingly boring experience, do a search on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office transactions page. You've got lines and lines and lines of patents being bought and sold, and you got assignees and assignors. And it if you have problems sleeping, if you have problems with insomnia, I guarantee you this will fix it. But as it turns out, at last count, Ping has purchased over 400 Nike patents, which again is fascinating. And I think we tend to sell Nike a little short. They had in terms of innovation, in terms of what they've done with equipment, Nike had what they called the oven down in Fort Worth, Texas, which was their research and development mecca. And they had some they hired a lot of really high-level talent from around the industry that they had working for them. And they came up with some pretty interesting products. I think Nike's problem was they never had that one I gotta have it product. They never had that. So they thought maybe they had it with the covert driver that was red and it had the cavity in the back. That one didn't resonate. You had a lot of interesting competition coming out at that same time. Their irons were always very solid, but nothing that said, I have to have this iron. Same thing with wedges and putters, all really good. Their toe sweep wedge was kind of one of the most fun clubs I've ever hit, but nothing ever said, I got to have it. But really innovative and interesting stuff. So Ping bought purchased over 400 Nike patents, which is interesting to me. What are they going to do with them? We were at Ping just last week looking at their new driver and iron, and the R&D department was very noncommittal when I asked, you know, what are you going to do with these things? Where do we see this going? And they kind of nodded their head and said, yes, we have many Nike patents. Yes, we purchased them. Yes, yes. You're right. We did buy them. Yes.
Very good. You sussed that out.
Yeah. And as a trained journalist, you know, I figured something was up here. But some of the patents they purchased, the one that really struck me was it was for a get ready, you'll hold on to your seat because this is exciting.
Okay.
The molding of polymer components for metal woods.
Did you say the molding of polymer components for metal woods?
Not just the molding, Danielle, rotational molding.
Oh, it's polymer
components. Yeah, I think that somehow that rotational thing is key. What does that mean? I have no idea. reading through the patent, it struck me that it probably might have had something to do with, you know, composite materials being used in the driver head. Nike has not, I'm sorry, Ping has not gone the composite route. And the Ping R&D department says, is very upfront about it, says, you know what, we haven't done all that can be done with titanium yet. We believe there's a long way to go in developing a better driver simply using titanium. So we have not gone down that path of composite materials. As Nike did it with their Vaporflex driver series, obviously TaylorMade and Callaway and Cobra have all gone down that path, but Ping has not. I would imagine, and I'm this is 150% conjecture, Danielle. Don't read anything more into this. It just seems to me that if you have that capability out there for purchase it and then put it in the hands of your rather substantial R&D team and see what they can do with it.
Yeah, just have it. Just having it. I kept thinking, no, they just want it. You know, you got something out there. You can put it in the safe and you can mess with a couple of them. You can use maybe some, but then the other people don't get to buy them. They're yours. And they're off the market. And it'll be a while, probably, before they're able to, in their research and development, get to all of these things and see how they can be. But maybe this one particular one, as you mentioned, they haven't done anything with composites. This will actually be the first thing they take on. This is a very interesting, and it's a real pleasure meeting you, John Barba, contributing journalist of Golf Spot. Can you just hold this phone real quick? Got to do this. KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KGU AM Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo, KGU FM Honolulu, and KPUA Hilo. All right.
Caller IDs. I remember those.
You remember caller ID? I mean, yes, of course. They're not really caller IDs. What did you call them? Station IDs, right?
Yeah, there you go. Top of the hour.
Yes, top of the hour. So, John Barba, I'd love for you to join us again at some point because this has been, you know, even though it's rather dry, it's still fascinating about how these club companies do their business. And when you say that, you know, we haven't gone down the road as far as we can with titanium in the drivers, well, that makes you wonder. I mean, what more? Well, I always think this, God, what else can they do? And apparently, there's more.
I think there always is. I think the days of monumental leaps in technology because of USGA limitations, you know, the days of big advancements in distance and whatever probably are gone. I think what we're looking at now is incremental improvements. And for a company like Ping that goes on 18 months to 2 year product cycle, you have that time to develop meaningful differences in your product, meaningful upgrades.
Yes.
Again, I'm going to give me 30 more yards? No. But it might give me a couple, 3 more yards. It might help with aerodynamics. It might help me, you know, swing my club a little bit faster and keep the ball in play. It might help with launch angle. There's a lot of minor things. If I had a driver that was 5 years old, buying a new driver would be a huge upgrade. If I have a driver that's, you know, last year's model, buying this year's model, the upgrade may not be quite as significant. But then again, we buy golf clubs many times because they make us feel good.
Right? Yes, so, exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Thank you, John. You'll come back again. John Barba, contributing journalist, mygolfspy.com. We'll be back after this. Ron Cyrak dropping in, Golf Channel contributor, PGA Lifetime Achievement in Journalism. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
We'll be right back to the best of The Golf Club.
I need help. Maybe you've heard that from people who are taking care of a loved one. They don't want to go into a home. They want to stay at home, but need help taking care of a parent, a spouse, or a relative. Meal planning and prep, light housekeeping, assistance, bathing, hygiene. See, home care to give peace of mind to you and to the one you love. A few hours a week or 24/7. It's really up to you. You choose the number of hours you need. So need help? They have a plan for you, for your parents, your own retirement. Eliminate the hassles and the frustration and the unknown. Call Need Help. The number is 548-7526. Eliminate the hassles, the frustration, and the unknown. Call Need Help now at 548-7526. They're available on Maui and Oahu, of course. They're actually in all 50 states. And tell them Danielle sent you. Need Help? That number is 548-7526.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurastone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. Super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint. It's polished concrete, as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurastone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
Feet of the ball, feet grounded, taking a deep breath, rip it, and rip it. Did I? Oh, man. And now back to Danielle Tucker.
Ron Cyrak, Golf Channel contributor, PGA Lifetime Achievement in Journalism, author of Vision 54 Trilogy, Play Your Best Golf Now, The Game Before the Game, and Every Shot Must Have a Purpose. He's been published in 8 languages and covered over, I think I can say, 160 majors at this point. What do you think? Ron Cyrak, welcome.
Hey, Danielle, thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
So how was the game? The match, the play.
We had to battle some New England weather this morning, some wind, some rain, but we had a ball.
Wonderful. I just tweeted, you know, off the course and into the clubhouse. Here comes Ron Cyrak. So yeah. I had to ask you, major championship season, USJ and Masters, they've taken center stage, but this week we go back to the LPGA with the KPMG Women's PGA Championship this coming week. So it's now the PGA of America taking center stage. Olympia Field is the course. I think you tweeted that Jim Furyk, the last time you were there was 2003 when Furyk won the U.S. Open?
That's correct, yep. Yeah, we're starting off a crucial stretch of the tour right now, the 3 majors in the next 6 weeks. You know, we got the women's PGA and then the women's U.S. Open and then the women's British Open. So if somebody gets hot over this next month and a half, they could rack up a lot of majors, a lot of Player of the Year points, and a lot of money.
A lot of money and have a good time. Now, speaking of somebody getting hot, do you see anyone in particular? I mean, Stacey Lewis?
We're at a fascinating point right now. We've gone 15 tournaments into the season and had 15 different winners. The last time the LPGA went that long without a repeat winner was 1991. And I think if you want to look at it, to compare the two things to two generations, in 1991, when they went 16 tournaments without having a repeat winner, the winners were like, Amy Alcott, Patty Sheehan, Betsy King, Beth Daniel, Meg Mallon,
Hollis Stacey, Jane Geddes, incredibly talented group of people. I think the LPGA is in the same situation right now. I think there's a bunch of really, really good players out there, and we're waiting to see if somebody's going to claim this year as their year. I think that Lexi Thompson is giving a hint that maybe she might be willing to step up. But, don't be surprised. Michelle Wee's been lurking on the fringes this entire season, and she's playing, in my mind, the most consistent golf I've seen her play since 2014 when she won the U.S. Women's Open.
So she's on. She definitely is, and then we see her just kind of lose it. What do you think that's in her game that does that, that going right off the cart?
Well, you know, I mean, she struggled her entire career with the putter.
Okay.
I think she's made huge gains with that. And look, the putter is what wins tournaments for you. You know, usually in a major, the person who makes the most 6-foot par-saving putts during the week is going to win. But she's improved her putting enormously. She's a much better lag putter than she was.
Excellent.
And she's not leaving herself those scary 4 or 5 footers for the second putt. She's getting it up closer to the hole. And what I really like that I've seen in her game this year is she's playing consistent golf. She has, throughout her career, had a tendency to throw in some stinker rounds with shocking regularity, and she hasn't been doing that this year, and she seems to be more mentally engaged and more physically in tune. I would not be surprised if she's a factor in these next several majors we have coming up.
Fantastic. Fantastic, of course. We're in Hawaii. And so we want Michelle Wee to win all the time. But Stacey Lewis has her putter back on her side. So that makes her a strong contender.
You know, from 1950 to 1994, only one non-American led the LPGA money list, and that was Akimoto in 1987. Since 1994, the only American to lead the LPGA money list was Stacey Lewis. And that's really a testament to how international, how global the women's game has become. But Stacey carried the load for the Americans for several years out there, and now she's been struggling for 3 years now with this, almost, you know, playing 54 or 63 really good holes but not being able to close the deal. She's getting close. I wouldn't be surprised to see if the KPMG is women's PGA is a place where she breaks through, because KPMG is one of her sponsors, and
yes.
she's somebody who knows how to knows how to perform for her sponsors.
You talk about growth of international golf in a piece you wrote for ESPNW, the Title IX surprise benefit. This is Ron Cyrak. You can follow him at Ron Cyrak on Twitter. He shares his articles and his views, and he's a fun guy to follow. Just as an aside real quick, did you get to see All Eyes on Me?
I did. Saw it 2 nights ago. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun to see the movie that my son-in-law wrote. To see his name up there.
That was your son-in-law who wrote, this is the Tupac Shakur untold story, and it's called All Eyes on Me. So that's it's getting a lot of great buzz. I'm really happy for the family. That's awesome.
He's a fascinating character, and the movie really, really delves into that. He sort of linked the civil rights movement of the 60s to the 90s, and he was somebody who tried to figure out a way to make the civil rights movement and some of the gang culture that was developing, and trying to figure out how to make them both work in the right direction, and he died much too young.
Yes. So let's go back to that piece that you
showed. Back to golf.
Yeah, back to golf. But I love, we were talking about getting in the kitchen just a few minutes ago, sushi, flatbread. To me, it's all golf. We're all golfers, and to confine ourselves to that, it's not fun. So let's go back to the Title IX benefits, that the growing the international game. How did Title IX help the LPGA with this international crowd?
Well, the first thing it did is it provided more athletic options for girls in the United States.
Right.
And,
yes.
You know, for a long time, there weren't that many ways to get an athletic scholarship, and golf was one of the ways to do it. And now there's so many different ways. So what's that done is it forced American colleges to start recruiting for top players outside the United States. You know, one of the coaches that I interviewed, the coach from the University of Washington women's team, won the NCAA team championship last year, and their seven-player roster has two players from New Zealand, one from China, one from Japan, three from the United States. So they went outside and recruited, and over the last 20 years, the LPGA has gone from about 75% of its membership being Americans to this year, fewer than 40% are Americans. And, you know, that's not to say that American golf slipped back in any way. It's just that the rest of the world stepped forward.
Caught up. Absolutely.
Yep.
So we've got a lot of international players playing on U.S. college teams. Does that make it harder for those American players that used to have a kind of an easy time getting on a team? Is there too much competition?
Well, probably 20 years ago, if you could break 80, you were going to get a college scholarship, and it's probably much more difficult than that now. You know, now at the same time, the good thing is there's about 290 Division I colleges that offer women's golf as a sport in which you can get an athletic scholarship. I think it's the sixth most popular sport in terms of in Division I schools for offering athletic scholarships. That's a really good thing. I mean, that's enormous exposure. I think the overall, while there's fewer Americans, I think the overall talent level has improved. And I also think that the NCAA deciding a few years ago to go to match play to determine the team competition is a really good move that down the road is going to translate for both the men and the women into a lot more Ryder Cup and Solheim Cup victories.
Absolutely.
For the Americans, because
yeah.
It's going to make them more experienced at match play.
Yeah, and then the Europeans have been playing match play their entire lives, and we're playing stroke play and playing catch-up when it comes to those international competitions like Ryder Cup and Solheim Cup. Speaking of Solheim Cup, returning to network television for the first time in 15 years when we're in Des Moines. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, NBC is doing a couple of really exciting things right now, and one is the fact that that they're going to have the Solheim Cup back on network TV, and two is the men's British Open. They're going to do gabble to gabble coverage. I mean, in the East Coast where I live, they're going to come on at 1:30 in the morning, and boom, go straight through the day. You know, between Golf Channel and NBC, and that's exciting to give that. I mean, you know, we are in an era now where delayed tape doesn't work for sports. Part of what makes sports the most valuable marketing commodity in the entire entertainment industry right now is the fact that it's live. It's happening right now. And you can't DVR past the commercials. You want to see it now. You don't want to see it on delayed tape. And I think for both the Solheim Cup and the British, they've really realized we've got these really compelling events, and we just got to give them to the public and give it to the public in the way that they want. What they want is as much as we can give them, and right now.
Yeah, well, from a marketing point of view, the networks need to do sports because it is right now. It's what people want right now, and you can't go to Netflix. So they've got to create a niche, and they're using sports as that niche, and it's perfect. I'm so excited that in Hawaii it'll start about 6:30 in the morning, not 1:30, and it'll go through the day and in the evening. So it's rather perfect.
I'll tell you, Danielle, too, that Solheim Cup in Des Moines should be. I covered the Senior U.S. Open there, I believe it was 1999, and on Saturday they set, and it still stands, the single day USGA attendance record. 52,000 people showed up on Saturday to watch the men's Senior Open, and I expect that we're going to get crowds, enormous crowds, for the Solheim Cup there. It's a perfect market for the LPGA to go into with this event, because it'll be the, like the Senior Open was that year. It's the biggest sporting event that's going to happen there all year.
Yeah.
And the people turn out. It was true when the USGA had the Women's US Open in Lancaster, Pennsylvania a couple years ago. That set the Women's US Open attendance record, because they went into that kind of market where this is the biggest thing we're going to have all year. And I think you're going to see in Des Moines massive crowds.
So tell me, what do you think that's going to, what is this Olympia field for the KPMG Women's PGA Championship? That's just next week. And I think you'll be writing for the LPGA during this event.
I will be. I'll be writing for the LPGA website and doing some video stuff for them. It'll be a fascinating look. I can't emphasize enough how much this alliance between KPMG, the PGA of America, and the LPGA has really upgraded this event. And it was controversial. There were a lot of the old line players, veteran players, who didn't like the fact that the LPGA Championship essentially went away. It lost its name, and it became the Women's PGA Championship. But they've upgraded the venues now. We've played Westchester Country Club. We've played Sahali, and now we're playing Olympia Fields. Both Sahali and Olympia Fields held men's major championships. Westchester Country Club held a PGA Tour event for many, many years there. So they upgraded the venues, and they really run the event. You feel like you're at a major championship when you're there. And it's true for the fans, it's true for the media, and it's really true for the players. And the players really appreciate that. They feel like it's a special, special week.
Yeah, you know, Westchester Country Club's going to be featured in Golf Kitchen America, the next book coming out. Olympia Field, what kind of a golf course is it?
My main memory of it is that there's no par fives after I think the 11th hole. It's the kind of golf course where if you had the lead on Sunday, it's a good course to protect the lead on. It's a bad course to try to storm from behind on. Now that said, Kerry Hay, who sets up golf courses for the PGA of America and will set the golf course up next week at Olympia Field, will give them a real major championship test. So you can expect to see a little skinnier fairways than normal, a little higher rough than normal, and a lot faster greens than normal.
Interesting. Did you think Erin Hills was a real championship test, major championship?
Well, it was different, it was different. I understand what the USGA was doing, they had two missions. One, take the U.S. Open to parts of the country you don't normally go to, and they did that two of the last 3 years now. They went to Chambers Bay in the Pacific Northwest, they went to Erin Hills in the Midwest, and take it to public golf courses. They like having the tournament at a course that the people who watch on TV can then actually go play. And next year, we're going to be at Shinnecock Hills, and you can't play that. That's a private club. So I understand that, and I thought the quality of play was exciting. I thought Justin Thomas is 63 on Saturday.
Amazing.
Two or three of the greatest shots I'd ever seen hit. That 3-wood into 18 was off the charts. I thought the final leaderboard in the top 20, nobody had previously won a major championship. But there were probably 6 or 8 players in that top 20 who were on my short list to eventually win a major. And Brooks Koepka was one, as is Hideki Matsuyama, as is Siwoo Kim, as is Ricky Fowler, as Patrick Reed.
Mm-hmm.
So it identified a different group of players, but really, really good players. I'm a traditionalist. I like when the U.S. Open is a struggle to shoot par, and this wasn't that. But I also think that going to a new golf course at the USGA and its setup erred on the side of caution. Wind had blown the entire week the way it did on Sunday, the scores wouldn't have been as low.
Yes, and they didn't need to narrow the fairways. I mean, make them wider. They should have kept them narrow, to me.
I agree. But I think that they were worried that, if the wind did blow for 4 days, and the balls were blown into that fescue and people were having to chip out sideways, then they'd come under a lot of criticism from players.
Gotcha.
But again, two out of the last 3 years, the USGA went to golf courses that were totally untested. Chambers Bay and Erin Hills, and that was in some ways that's a head scratching reach for them.
Well, it is, but it's them stepping outside the box, and that I think that's the beauty of what they did. The USGA, you know, stepping outside the box. The USGA Museum featuring women golf course architects in their next presentation that's going to start a soft opening July 1st. I think that's wonderful. They're doing things that they didn't traditionally do, and that's what we've been asking them to do. So for that, I give them a big, you know, yay. One person who you must have really respected, Sandy Tatum, passed at the age of 96. And I didn't want to end the show without talking with you about how he impacted your life.
Well, I can't tell you how many times I've worked on stories, and I would call...
It's a shame that we just got cut off. We just lost Ron Cyrek. That's very strange. The second call that we've lost, I think he might be able to come back in. But there were just a couple of things that I wanted to talk with Ron about. And it looks like we've been disconnected. Maybe his battery died. He's been on the golf course this entire time. I hope to have Ron on while he's at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Jim Bones and Phil Mickelson, if you've been at work and didn't get to catch up, after 25 some years, they are no longer a team. An amicable dissolving of their business relationship. Phil Mickelson and some people were talking about how Jim Bones should become an on-course commentator for television. And I thought, God, that's an interesting thing. We've seen, or we've heard his voice so many years, the way he used to talk with Phil Mickelson about this shot and that shot. And by the way, Jim Bones used to get one veto a year, and he hadn't used the veto, and he was going to pass it on to Phil's brother, who's going to be caddying for him for the remainder until something, whatever, happens. And Phil said, no way. No, the veto is non-transferable. Another question I had for, of course, Ron Cyrek, our guest, about the drug suspensions. I think it's a great thing that now everything will be revealed. Dustin Johnson was under such a cloud when he disappeared for 6 months, and there was all this chitter-chatter about what may or may not have been going on with Dustin, and, you know, there was all this talk. That'll eliminate the talk, and we can just deal with it. The person can deal with whatever it is that they're dealing with, and everything is out in the open. It doesn't have to be, because what if it wasn't true at all? You know, which more often than not, these kinds of things aren't true. So let's get rid of them right away. All right, I want to thank the people who make this show possible. Futura Stone, Futura Stone's master craftsman. Can turn your building, your warehouse, your showroom, your home project into artwork. Seriously, Futura Stone, only the best. I love the work they do. Creative Plumbing. Whether you're a shopping center, a very large one, or a little strip mall, a store, a custom home, a townhouse, any kind of building, whether you're a new build, a renovation, a repair, call Creative Plumbing. It's got to be done right. You don't want to have to go back in. Call Creative Plumbing. Claude Brousseau, he'll be on the show next week from France. Master PGA professional, yes, probably the most traveled person I know at this point. Two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year. He's a Vision 54 coach, Aimpoint certified, and Golf Channel lead coach. You need a lesson with Claude Brousseau. He's at the Kahili course on Maui. And Alan Nakata and Associates. Yes, need help taking care of a parent, a spouse, or a relative with meal planning and prep, light housekeeping, assistance bathing and hygiene, home care to give peace of mind to you because they want to stay home. They don't want to go into a home. They want to age at home. It's less expensive, but you need help. a few hours a week, or 24/7. You choose the number of hours. Need help? Has a plan for you, for your parents, or maybe your own retirement. You should look into it. Eliminate the hassles, the frustration, the unknown. What am I going to do? Who am I going to turn to? Need help? 548-7526 on Oahu and Maui in all 50 states. Tell them Danielle sent you. Need help? 548-7526. Thank you for your mana, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. And if you'd like to hear the show, it's at radiogolfclub.com. That's radiogolfclub.com. All the shows are archived there, so you can go to the, there's two sections when you hit the listen button. One is to listen live, and that's only available, of course, when it's live. It'll be ending in about 30 seconds. Then there's the archives, and all you have to do is press archives, and it'll give you years of the show. Aloha. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2017.